The proud defender of the American dream, Rick Smith.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Check out the website, thericksmithshow.com. Questions, comments, something on your mind, you can email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. So, of course, nobody surprised that Donald pulled out of the... I guess we're all surprised that he pulled out, just not pulled out of the Iran deal. He did say he was going to do it, and, you know, he tweeted out, I said I was going to do it, and I did it, and that was basically his spiel. But I guess, you know, nobody ever again will trust this country because, you know, we seem to have elected a lunatic. But lots going on, and here to share some thoughts on the big news of the day, I've asked our good friend Ian Millhiser to come talk with us. He's the justice editor over at Think Progress. Ian, thanks for taking time for us.
Good to be back. Thanks so much.
So what do you think of this? Any shock, any surprise that Trump pulled out?
I mean, no surprise at all. I mean, he's been saying he was going to do this, and, you know, Trump isn't a guy who, like, you know, is easily susceptible to reason. I think it's a shame, man. I think it's a shame not just because the Iran deal was working, but it's a shame because if you are any other foreign leader, the next U.S. president, is, look, like, I might trust you. I think that, you know, so long as you are in office, we can make a deal and I can trust you to abide by that deal. But the next time there's an election, you know, who knows what sort of kook is going to get elected. And I can't trust the United States anymore. And that's what's so troubling about this, is that the United States gave its word. The United States has now, you know, broken its promise on this deal. And that's going to have very frightening long-term implications for the United States of America.
No, I agree with you. And, you know, the fear in having him in the White House, and I've been saying this all along, is we end up having these wide swings, these wide ideological swings, to where when the next guy comes in, we're going to have to undo all the damage that Trump did. And then you end up with a Trump figure after that, where we go swing all the way back to the extreme on the other side. And there's no stability. And that's right. Not good. I mean, you will end up like one of the South American countries.
Right. And what happens, I mean, it's not just, you know, foreign leaders who won't be able to trust us anymore. I mean, if you're a business and you're trying to decide, like, what sort of investment you should make based on what you expect U.S. policy to look like over the course of the next 10 years, I don't know what you do. But the range of possibilities at this point is everything from a Paul Ryan dystopia where there's no meaningful welfare state, no meaningful business regulations, to, like, you know, social democracy. And I don't know how you plan for that, you know, that wide a variance.
No, I mean, it's bizarre. But again, you know, this is why elections have consequences, and November so very important. I wanted to get some of your thoughts on Donald Trump bringing in Rudy Giuliani, which, I got to be honest, I've never had really a high opinion of Rudy, you know, post-mayor, and even while he was mayor, you know, questionable. This latest stint of media appearances, I not just me questioning, but a lot of people questioning, is he losing his mind? I mean, did he go to law school? I mean, a lot of things I'm going, I think Manny Moe and Jack would have been better attorneys.
Yeah, I think that if this were any other lawyer and any other client, I would really feel bad for the guy. I mean, he looks like someone who's in over his head, who's confused, I don't know whether it's because of cognitive decline or just because he hasn't been a practicing lawyer practicing law very much lately, and, like, just isn't doing the due diligence that any lawyer needs to have when they take on a case like this. But he's, you know, he's not prepared. He doesn't know key facts when he's giving these interviews. He says things that incriminate his own client. And, you know, something has gone very wrong, either in terms of, like, his mental ability or his willingness to do the work. It is a testament to a lot of things. Among other things, it is a testament to what a clown show the whole Trump apparatus has become,
right,
that this is the only lawyer that they can get.
But let me ask you this, because, you know, you brought up the clown show, and there's part of me that, as I watch this, started going, you know, he can't be this bad of a lawyer. I mean, my grandfather always told me, you have the right to remain silent. Use that.
Right.
And use it often. You know, use that right as often as you can, because the more you speak, the more they will use against you. But there's part of me that goes, you know, Rudy's just throwing all this out there. It's kind of like the spaghetti theory. Eventually something will stick. If we muddy the waters so much that nobody believes anything anymore. And that seems to me to be kind of the direction that he maybe strategically thought is a good way to go.
I mean, maybe that works as a political strategy, but as a legal strategy, you know, if you say 12 contradictory things and you're someone's lawyer and I'm the opposing counsel, I will go through those 12 contradictory things and find the one thing that is worst for your client.
Right.
And, you know, that's what I'm going to emphasize in my brief. So, you know, I mean, you know, I agree that he may be playing this political game that we've seen for a while from, you know, Trump and various Trumpian people. Will you just say a bunch of wacky things? And the idea behind the political strategy is you sort of overwhelm people's senses and they don't realize what's going on. And that may work as a political strategy. But as a legal strategy, the single most damaging thing you have said is going to get used in the opposing counsel's brief. And, you know, courts are going to hold your client to account for it.
Yeah. No, but again, I don't think they're worried about the court part of this. To them, everything seems to be political, because if they can muddy the water so badly that you don't even take the court system as legitimate, which is what I think they're really trying to do, delegitimize just the entire process across the board.
Yeah, I mean, maybe that's their strategy, but I guess what I would be thinking if I was his lawyer is, what if that doesn't work?
Good point.
I mean, you know, when I've advised clients in the past, you know, the first advice that I give is, let's find a normal way to do this. You know, let's find a way to accomplish what you want to accomplish that is the sort of thing that happens all the time. And, you know, only if can't find a way to do it that way, do you then start looking for really outlandish ways to get things done? I mean, it's just bad lawyering to not try to play within the rules when you can.
Yeah, I mean, this isn't a normal client. These aren't normal lawyers, and these certainly aren't normal times. But hey, you know, from sitting in this chair, it's always fun and interesting to watch just how badly they keep digging themselves in. And, you know, it's that the old law of, you know, when you find yourself in trouble, stop digging. And, well, they've doubled down on the digging. I also wanted to get some of your thoughts on this week. There's a whole bunch of news and a whole bunch of stories around this Gina Haspel. Which, you know, evidently Trump wants her to lead the CIA. So we're going to bring torture back to the CIA. Is that a good thing?
No, I mean, of course. And it's not just a bad thing for moral reasons. It's a bad thing because torture doesn't work. You know, there was a Senate investigation in 2014 into the CIA's use of torture. And what it found was that not only did we not get any useful information from the people from torturing people, but we wound up getting a lot of misdirection, because when you're being tortured, you'll say anything. You know, if you think the person torturing you wants you to say that you're Osama bin Laden, you will confess to being Osama bin Laden, and that's not useful. It's not a reliable way to garner intelligence. So even setting aside the fact that torture is illegal, even if it were something that we were allowed to do, it's not something that we should do, because it's counterproductive.
Right, but the thing is we all have in our mind, and how it's been sold to us is, you know, that every moment, right, you know, that old TV show 24, you know, there's a ticking bomb and we've got to get the answer out of them. And it doesn't matter what the means. We've just got to get the answer, Ian. One way or another, you're going to talk. One way or another, whether we, right, you know, teach you to read the phone book or break out the rubber hose, or we waterboard you or put you in, you know, in really uncomfortable holds.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I just have two responses to that. I mean, first of all, like, the ticking time bomb scenario just doesn't happen very often. Like, I mean, by the time we have captured someone and identified who they are and, like, figured out what information we think they might have, you know, if there was a ticking time bomb, it is typically already gone off. But even if you have, you know, like some rare situation where like you have this time sensitive information to trying to get out of the person, if you torture them, they're likely to lie to you. You know, they're likely to tell you that the bomb is in the wrong place. They're likely to give you the wrong instructions on how to disarm it. And, you know, how is that useful?
It's a good point. But again, you it works on TV.
Right.
And it works really well on TV. And in a neat hour. I mean, because I think we're all of us are kind of clouded in a way by what we see on that idiot box.
Well, and certainly the president of the United States is. I mean, part of the problem you have here is that you have a president who came up through reality television show. And, you know, when your background is, you know, you're a game show host before you became president, then the sort of spectacle that works on TV looks really great to you. But it's, you know, it's not a good idea as a matter of policy.
I mean, every day I wake up and, you know, someone emails me to remind me that what we see going on in D.C. is not normal. Every day I get a, this is not normal email, and it's not, you know, I'm hoping this doesn't become what we're accustomed to. And I fear that a lot of people have already moved on. It is what it is. He's off his rocker, whatever. I guess this is just the new normal. And it's really concerning to me.
Yeah, no, it's terrifying. And I mean, people who have studied authoritarian regimes, what they'll tell you is that, you know, people in oppressive countries, just after a while, you just go about your life. I mean, you're poorer because authoritarian regimes tend to have weaker economies, and you don't have like the freedoms that you should have. And you know, there may be some things that you don't do because you're afraid of the government. But after a while, it just becomes, you know, the ocean that you're swimming in, and you don't think about it anymore. And you know, that's part of what's so troubling about this administration, is that, you know, if the United States is in a period of extended decline right now, we're just going to slowly decline, and people will get used to it, and our lives will get worse. But there's no get, you know, but like, at least it's very important that we continue to remind ourselves that, like, this is awful and we shouldn't accept it, because there's a very natural tendency to do so.
Yeah, but, you know, in a very 1984 way, every day we're told how wonderful the economy is doing. You know, cocoa beans are up today, and we're reminded how the economy is great. It's never been better under Trump. And the tax cuts, evidently the tax cuts are really working for somebody. It's just not the vast majority of us.
Well, I mean, part of the problem there is, like, you know, I mean, Trump did inherit the Obama economy. And, the economy's been, you know, was slowly growing at about 2 to 2.5% for almost all the Obama years, and it's still growing at the same rate. Now, you know, if you have terrible policies, eventually what happens is that you start to feel it. But one of my fears is that it can take years of bad governance before you begin to see the fruits of the bad governance. I mean, you know, George W. Bush was in office for 8 years, and we didn't really start to see the bottom fall out until year 8. So, you know, one of my fears is that it's entirely possible that we muddle along, and, like, you know, I don't expect a huge economic boom, but we could see, you know, a continuation of the sort of Obama levels of growth for a really long time, and that will, you know, obscure the fact that if we keep going down the path we're going down, it's going to end.
No, it's one of my great fears as well, because we're redoing the same things of the Bush era, giving away huge amounts of tax cuts in order to prop up an economy. And I keep asking, you know, if the economy was as great as Trump was saying it was, why did we have a stimulative tax bill to get money into the hands of the very wealthy, other than it's just a giant ripoff?
Right.
So let me ask you last bit of questioning. I wanted to get to this Devin Nunes thing, because this is kind of fascinating to me. Nunes wants some documents. The attorney general, not so thrilled. Where's this going?
Yeah, so the issue here is that Nunes has, and I mean, at this point, it's hard to describe it as anything other than a conspiracy theory. So Nunes has this idea that the whole reason that the Russia investigation was launched was because of the PK dossier, that the FBI got their hands on the on this P-tape dossier that had a lot of salacious details about Donald Trump, and they used it to get a FISA warrant against one of Trump's former aides, and this is all just like a big conspiracy. Oh, and by the way, Hillary Clinton paid for it. And I mean, that's just descriptively not true. I mean, the FBI has known that some of Trump's former aides had Russian ties, stretching back to at least 2013. You know, we actually do know for a fact that Russia was involved in the hacks. So descriptively, what Nunes thinks is going on is not true, but he's trying to subpoena all these documents from DOJ on the theory that they will prove his conspiracy theory. DOJ generally doesn't like to turn over documents that deal with ongoing investigations because it can undermine the investigation. And so now Nunes' latest play is that he's threatening to call a contempt vote and have, you know, his fellow Republican, Jeff Sessions, held in contempt of Congress for not turning over these documents. I mean, I don't know that Nunes is going to have the votes in the House to do this. And if he does have the votes, all that it does is set off a protracted court battle. They also held Eric Holder in contempt, and it was 6 years of litigation before anything really came of it. I'm not necessarily all that worried about it as a practical matter, but it's kind of frightening that you have this conspiracy theorist as the chair of the House Intelligence Committee.
Yeah, which would be nice to see him go in November. But, you know, as I look at this, you know, if I'm Sessions, I don't want to give Nunes anything because I'm afraid he's going to go run and tell. I mean, if I'm anybody, I don't give him anything because he's already proven he's untrustworthy.
Right. And on top of that, like, Sessions is at least in theory recused from the Russia matter.
Right.
So, I never thought I would use these words, but it strikes me as unfair to Jeff Sessions to hold him in contempt for something that he does that he's not even in charge of.
Yeah, but you can just hold him in contempt anyway because he'd be in contempt of something else. So, you know, why not?
Yeah, why not? Like, you know, he'll get some headlines out of it, and he gets some Fox News hits where he sounds like, you know, he's a tough guy who's really standing up to folks. But yeah, and, you know, and maybe, like, Nunes is trying to signal to Trump that Trump should fire Sessions, because then you could bring in someone else who isn't recused, who can undermine the Mueller investigation. But, yeah, I mean, it's the sort of gamesmanship that's troubling for, if nothing else, if no other reason, because being held in contempt of Congress used to mean something. You know, when it's thrown around as part of these silly political fights, you aren't just, you know, you don't just look dumb. You wind up undermining the seriousness of a permanent tool that Congress is probably going to use for a legitimate reason someday.
Yeah, but again, you know, all of that is part of the MO anyway. I mean, to delegitimize all of government. And it was interesting. I had interviewed a Republican candidate from the South Carolina 4th Congressional District, Trey Gowdy's district, who was running on restoring faith in government. And I'm going, you're a Republican. How is that your slogan? You've been trying to destroy it for 40 years. You're undermining your own party. Quite an interesting interview. We'll see how this plays out. Again, another one of those moments where you go, this is not normal. Just not normal. Ian, I appreciate the time. Always great having you on, though.
All right. Thanks so much. It was good chatting.
Thanks so much, our good friend Ian Millhiser. Check out their work over at Think Progress. We'll get a link at thericksmithshow.com. Quick break. Right back. Stick around. And listen to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
Wants me to give my money to someone like you, but I do believe in what a crazy man can do.
Not right wing, just right. The Rick Smith Show.